योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्येन योपाकरोत्तं प्रब्रह्मणीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि. Now we are continuing our discussion of the 17th sutra of the Sadhanapada. In your text you may find it, second chapter. So again, it's a description of the real cause of suffering, real cause of dukkham is called. We are discussing the dukkha chaturvyuha, the quadrangle. I mean, the world, all the empirical experiences, the worries and problems, the diversity of experiences give us the feeling that this life is good, but it's not perfect. There is something wrong. In fact, that is the very beginning of wisdom in philosophy and also in spirituality. So this realization of the imperfection of, or an element of imperfection in worldly life is the first step. So it's called Dukkha Chaturvyuha. It's called. That's the Patanjali's paradigm of imperfection of the world. It runs very close to Buddha's tradition, Buddhist concept of the four fundamental truths. Buddha says there is suffering in the world, there's a cause for suffering, and there's a way out of suffering, and that way out is liberation or nirvana. So also in the Indian school of medicine deals with the physical maladies. Here also the Patanjali's paradigm of the doctrine of imperfection, so to speak. We should remember that this is not a negative outlook. So sometimes people may misunderstand that there is an element of pessimism or skepticism involved in this Patanjali's paradigm. It's not. Rather, it's a very realistic interpretation of our life as a whole. So that's described here. Drashta drishyohu samyogu heyahetuhu. This is the 17th verse. So the cause of suffering is the association of drashta, I mean the seer, the experiencer, and the experienced, the seen. So here we should understand, of course we discussed for some time, but again we should continue, recapitulate. We forget our true nature. And our true nature is devoid of this dukkha element. Once we realize our true nature, once we get back to our own home, our true identity, then there will be no suffering. That is the fundamental thesis. So what is the reason for suffering? Association of our true identity with what is really not our true identity. Many things happen in this world, in the objective world. Many experiences which are really reflections of these things in the buddhi. So very often what happens is, this is a long description, we'll go to that, different views, how this samyoga association happens. Now, once we realize this, then we start our own homeward journey. If you read Swami Vivekananda's translation, it's a very, very interesting parable, an example Swami Vivekananda gives. It's a very classic, it's a well-known example. It is taken from a mythological literature. How this association, wrong association, happens, and how we forget our true identity and how we misinterpret ourselves to be beings that undergo all these diverse experiences. When there is a pleasant experience, we get completely over, we lose our balance, we are swept off our feet by our happiness or enjoyment. And when something unhappy, unpleasant happens, we get lost in that sorrowful experience. Now, Vivekananda gives a very interesting example. That gives in a nutshell this, how this really happens. The story of Indra, you know, Indra is the, you find in the books, you find God, G-O-D. It roughly corresponds to angels in Abrahamic traditions. They are not monotheistic gods, in fact, capital letter G. So whenever you find in Hindu mythological books a term like G-O-D, small letter God, for plurals, you know, gods, goddesses, any number of them, they correspond to what we understand as angels, good-natured angels in Abrahamic, not troublesome ones, good-natured angels who help us in our spiritual, who themselves have some concept of dharma, ethical principles. So Indra is a chief among them. So once for a fun, you know, he disguised himself as a pig. That's how the story goes. It comes originally comes from a Puranic literature, old mythological book. Swamiji brings it in this context. So once he disguised himself as a pig, and then it had a she pig, a sow, and a number of children, and they were living happily in a mud pool, in a mire, and they were thought very perfectly, very happy. Absolutely no problem. He had plenty of children, relatives, and his wife, home is this mud pool itself. Now, so this continued, and this, he continued this way for a long time, and he thought this is the best existence, best condition that we could ever have. Now, other angels were worried, because their chief is now a big pig, living with a she pig with a number of children, wallowing in the dirty, filthy mud pool, you know, mire. So not a, it's a matter of prestige for them also. So they came to him and told him, look here, what's the matter? This is your... Then he said, oh, no problem, I'm quite happy here. So he had many children, small little pigs and his wife and an extended family of pigs in the mud pool. And then what happened? After some time, the other angels, they came back and they started killing all the little ones, the children, pigs. Then the lady pig and Jinn, both Indra and his wife, began crying and weeping. And finally, they pierced the body of the big pig, that is Indra himself. Then with a laughter, he came out of this big pig body and immediately understood what a terrible, shameful situation he was in all these years. Now, this is a very interesting example that Swami Vivekananda gives. In a way, we are all in a state of sleep if we do not realize this element of dukkha. So we should always keep in mind the translation will be always suffering or grief for dukkha. So to be more precise, to understand it in relation to our own life, it is the realization or it is the emergence of the wisdom which enables us to look at our own life from a higher angle, from a higher perspective. It happens at a particular stage in our spiritual growth, spiritual evolution. You can always find this in individual life. So small babies, small children may fight and quarrel and work hard to get chocolates. When they grow old, when they become youngsters, they may want race cars. And when they enter into business, they want to become billionaires and maybe later running for presidency also. You know. So what happens to them international acclaim? One billionaire wants to become a trillionaire. A small officer wants to become a big CEO. A poor man wants to become rich. So there is always the realization of some imperfection with the existing conditions. That is always true. See, a student who gets admission to a lower level university wants to work hard to get into Harvard or Stanford. It happens. A lower official wants to become a higher official. So there is always a realization of imperfection with the present existing condition. This is natural to human beings. Every thinking, intelligent human being will have this. At empirical level, not spiritual level necessarily. At very empirical level. Now, so there is a gradation, a gradually evolving, ascending evolution of our desire, our expectations, our goals. Now, at one stage, this evolution takes a quantum leap. When we reach a higher level of evolution, there is a quantum leap. I can give you an example. Max Müller actually started reading Rigveda, studying Rigveda, classifying Rigveda. He started working hard to publish Rigveda Samhita, the first and most original, the earliest record of spiritual humanity, spiritual heritage. Now, it starts with Agni Mele Purohitam, Yajnasadevam Murticham Hotaram Bratnadhatamam. I propitiate the fire god who leads me, who is the chief, who leads me to the higher spiritual enlightenment by taking my offerings to different deities. And it ends with the Yathasu Sahasa that you find here. There is the last sukta of the 10th mandala. Huge book. Now, Max Müller was a great Indologist working in Oxford, and he started his work. They say, according to the available records, he was commissioned by some missionaries, some radical evangelical missionaries, to publish this book so that people will understand, humanity will understand what an absolute nonsense the Vedic literature is. And East India Company, who was ruling India at that time, financed the whole publishing project. But when Max Müller started reading this, he became a different person. He was an eminent professor in Oxford. When we started reading this, all his priorities, everything vanished. He became a great fan, a great spiritual seeker, and a devotee of Vedanta, non-dualistic philosophy, the spiritual tradition of Vedic heritage. Now, Emerson got a copy of Bhagavad Gita from Carlyle. And that was the beginning of a new life in him. So you find his journals, number of references and articles on this. So, you know, you sometimes at one stage in our life, the whole set of priorities take altogether a new dimension, and we start looking for something higher, something transcendental. You know, yoga sutra, the first yoga sutra, the first chapter, Samadhipada, is Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Now, henceforth, we are starting a discussion and exposition of yoga. Now, Atha means now onwards, henceforth. Means now we have already reached the highest, most sublime level of our aspirations in this world. Now our aspiration, our priorities take a new dimension. What lies beyond this empirical existence? What is there something beyond these empirical pleasures, material pleasures? Is there something beyond all this? This inquiry. This is a higher aspiration. And this is what happens when you realize this dukkha. That is what exactly the dukkha signifies. Which happened to Buddha when he was a prince. He saw a dead body, a sick man, and of course, old aged person suffering. And then finally he saw a great saint who apparently did not show any indication of suffering problems. So this realization of a need, a definite need for a higher spiritual wisdom, that is what is meant by the principle of realizing this life as dukkha. So why I'm emphasizing this point? In translation, because that's a real literal translation of the word, Sanskrit word dukkham, you know. So it is not grief or sorrow or tragedy as we understand in ordinary life situations. It is rather the dawning of higher wisdom, the emergence of a new perspective, a new paradigm. That's the meaning of dukkha. Now, so there is a verse in the Mandukya Karika, anadi mayaya supto yada yada jiva prabuddhide ajam anidram asvapnam advedam buddhide tada. We are all asleep now. Right now we are all sleeping in a spiritual sense. When we wake up, suddenly we realize there is this higher spiritual dimension. At that time, we realize this dukkha. And this dukkha, according to Patanjali, is the result of samyoga. Samyoga means association. Drashta and drishya. Drashta means the seer, and drishya means either buddhi or prakriti. In the higher sense, it could mean the entire universal cosmic phenomena. But in a particular sense, it could mean our intelligence, our intellect, our buddhi. So when the Purusha reflects on buddhi, the buddhi is able to pursue external objects. Then what happens? There is a wrong association. Purusha identifies itself with the external objects. It forgets its true identity, which is omniscient, free from any of these problems, which is not subjected to this cyclic evolution or this impermanence. So that real identity is forgotten and a false identity is created. This is called samyoga. Now we will discuss these points, that is drashta, drishya and samyoga. The three terms we have to discuss here in your book. Now, there are different views which illumine the real situation. So remember that parable Swamiji gives, the example, the story from mythological literature. It is very, very pertinent and very relevant in this context. How this happens? Now, Vyasa says the drashta, the seer, is buddhehi prati samvedi purushaka. So what happens is, the seer, the experiences, is purusha. And this purusha is really not associated with the external objects. But that true pure nature is forgotten, and then it gets reflected on buddhi. So through this reflected light of purusha, what happens? The buddhi knows the object. So buddhi in yoga and sakya philosophy, buddhi is actually an inert phenomenon, part of prakriti, one of the evolutes of prakriti, one of the 23 evolutes of prakriti. That is what buddhi is. But when Purusha is reflected in buddhi, in intellect, then the intellect is able to pursue, understand, see, smell, touch, and know different external objects through the five senses. Now, so this awareness of its own object, so Purusha is reflected in Prakriti, sorry, in Buddhi, intellect. Intellect perceives different objects. Then what happens? The awareness of its own light is reflected by Buddhi on Purusha. So Purusha forgets its identity. It identifies itself as different external objects. To give a simple example, how does it function in our daily life? I can give an example. Suppose we lose our balance, we feel, this happens only at one higher stage of our evolution. If we have not started spiritual evolution, then we'll be very happy, as Indra was very happy wallowing in the mud pool. So that should be understood. So when we realize that there is a higher spiritual wisdom that would help us to look at our own life and external objects from a new perspective, that will help us in our daily life situations, then we go for it. Otherwise, what happens? We always identify ourselves as the experiencer of these external things. So when something tragic happens, immediately we forget we are the Purusha. We are that omniscient, self-aware reality which is not associated by its own nature, which is not related to these external things. So that truth is forgotten, and in its place a false identity. Well, I am the one who is experiencing this. So we lose our balance, we'll become anxious, we start suffering. So also when something gives us pleasure, when a happy situation emerges, again, we start identifying ourselves as, well, I am going through this happy situation. So in both ways, we identify ourselves with these fleeting, changing phenomena of external objects, external experiences. So this association, this samyoga, it completely hides, conceals our true nature. And once we forget our true nature, a false identity is created. Now, in our life, when we have to face some difficulties or problems, at least intellectually, if we can keep in mind, well, that's not my true nature. I have a higher spiritual dimension. Once we remember this, then we'll immediately we will be able to look at the same problem from a different angle. So it means our own inner growth, our own evolution enables us to form a new perspective. This is the real practical application of this principle. If we can remember that we are in reality different from the miserable body-mind complex that forgets its own identity when it comes in contact with all these external experiences. It doesn't mean that we should run away from external experiences. It doesn't mean that. It only means that we should take a new perspective. Otherwise, we'll be caught in this trap. Trap means like the Indra who thought that he was a big, mighty pig who was living, wallowing in the mud pool. Forgot his true identity. And then what happens? It is caught in a trap. At the first stage, we realize that we are caught in a trap. You can find in all religious traditions, all spiritual traditions you find. There are three levels of our awareness. If you read any of the ancient books, there is always a reference to an ancient condition. In the times of antiquity, everything was wonderful. You see, before Adam ate the apple, there is no problem. In Hindu mythological tradition, you find there was a Satyayuga in ancient times. So you find, and you also in many traditions, you know, in all traditions you find this. In ancient times, long back, everything was fine. So it was a state of perfection. And in future, God will return one way or other, and again, we will get back to that pristine, old, ancient, happy situation. And right now we are going through an intermediary stage. So this is common in all traditions. But in yoga, what Patanjali says is, once we take this new perspective, then we start getting out of this trap. Realization of our true nature. Our true nature corresponds to our ancient, pristine condition, state of perfection from which we are coming. Our purpose to practice through yoga, through spiritual realization, we are trying to get back to this pristine condition, the perfect condition, through yoga. But the intermediary stage is the stage of practice. So, the realization of this imperfection that we had to transcend, get out of, that corresponds to this dukkha aspect, which is to be eradicated. And the dukkha is created by some yoga, by our identity by identifying ourselves with all these emerging objects through buddhi. That is the cause of this problem. Now, what is drishya? So, drishya is the seen, the experienced, the objective phenomena. That's the transition you find here. The whole manifested world is drishya. So, everything in this world is drishya. So, there is an interesting description by Vyasa. Buddhisattva uparudha sarve dharma. Various objects which are known through the matrix of buddhi. So all the external objects that we come to know of, all the external phenomenal things, when we touch something, when we see something, when we hear something, or when we taste something, through all these means, we perceive, we know certain things using our buddhi. And buddhi borrows its ability to perceive these things from Purusha. But through this process, what happens? Purusha identifies itself through these external objects. How this happens is a very interesting description by different commentators. Vyasa, Vijnana Bhikshu and Bhoja, three famous commentators of yoga system. Now, there is a very interesting description by Vyasa. So, Vyasa says, Drishyam ayaskanta manikalpam sannidhimatropakari drishyatvena bhavadi purushasya swam drishirupasya swaminaha. So, it's very interesting. Vyasa says, Chitta or mind or buddhi acts like a magnet. Now what happens when our buddhi, mind, gets the power of a magnet? It attracts all the external objects available in the phenomenal empirical world. So according to Vyasa, the chitta or buddhi is like a magnet. And it helps by its mere proximity and by its objectivity. It becomes a property of Purusha. And then it acts as a magnet. And it attracts different things from different sources. So if our buddhi or intelligence or intellect or mind functions like a magnet, then there's a big problem. See, very often we perceive, understand the world according to the nature of our own mind. To give one simple example, you read a book today that you must have read 20 years back. The Bible, the Gita, or any great spiritual, religious literature, or even great classical literature. What you understand today will be very different from what you understood perhaps as a young student or maybe a school student 20 years back. Suppose you have become a serious spiritual seeker. So you have become an immersion. You have become a spiritual seeker, a mystic. If you read the Bible, you may get a different meaning. But the same book means something totally different from the perspective, from the standpoint of a mere student of literature. It could mean something totally different from the standpoint of a radical evangelist. It could mean something totally different from the perspective of a Buddha. So the same book, the Bible, the Gita, or the Vedas, or the Tripitaka or Buddhist tradition. What we perceive from a book or even from a painting, there are wonderful paintings which can teach a lot about life, about religion, about spirituality or spiritual life, which can inspire. What we perceive very often depends upon the condition of our own mind. So our mind acts like a magnet. But how it observes external things depends upon our own mind. Very often, it's like placing a mirror in front of your own mind, which is not possible. You can place a mirror in front of your physical body, face, but you cannot place a physical mirror cannot be placed in front of your mind. But if you read a great book, really great book I'm talking about, or a great painting, if you listen to great music, it's like placing a mirror right in front of your own mind, your own intellect, and you get a real picture of your own personality. So that's why Vyasa says, drishyam ayaskanta manikalpam sannidhi matropakari drishyatvena bhavati. So he says the chitta acts like a magnet, and sannidhi matrena means by its close proximity. What happens? It becomes the property of Purusha. So, if we can clean our mind, then the mind will be able to read great things, good things in the external world. I can give one classic example from the life of Siddhamakshana. Siddhamakshana was the great teacher of Swami Vivekananda. Very wonderful example you can see. She had a disciple who was a great dramatist, a great literary genius. His name was Girish Chandra Ghosh, who was the founder of a great well-known theatre of Calcutta, at that time, Star Theatre. In the later half of 19th century, this theatre played a very important role in that part of India in promoting Puranic themes in plays and dramas. So Girish Chandra Ghosh was a bohemian, led a very loose life, but by coming in contact with Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, he became a great saint. Now, Sri Ramakrishna he invited Girichandra Ghosh, the disciple, invited Sri Ramakrishna to visit his theater. And he used to arrange plays on spiritual themes. So the life of great devotees like Prahlada. Prahlada is a Prahlada Chasmi Daityanam. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, I am among the demons, I am Prahlada. Prahlada was the son of a demon, a monster, Hiranyakashipu. But he was also the greatest devotee of those days. So God made his permanent residence in the heart of Prahlada. That's the scripture says. So he was the greatest devotee of those times, Prahlada. So Girishandra Ghosh used to arrange these wonderful plays on spiritual themes taken from Hindu mythological sources. So Sri Ramakrishna was once invited to visit the theater and see some of these plays which depicted the life of great saints, devotees of God, mystics and like that. So when Sri Ramakrishna went there, when he saw the picture, when he saw the drama in front of him, what he forgot it was a theater. He forgot it was an actor who was playing the role of this great devotee. He saw in the actor, not the actor, but the real Prahlada. Because Sri Ramakrishna was living in the world of devotees and spiritual ideas. So when a professional actor played the role of a great devotee, he could see in the actor the real Prahlada. So seeing the real on the false, you can see. It was mere act play. Because Sri Ramakrishna's mind was immersed in spiritual thoughts. It was so spiritually sensitive that when he saw these characters playing on the stage, his mind went back to the days, the classical times, when this devotee, great devotee, might have lived thousands of years back. He's a mythological character, a symbol of the highest devotion to God. So he could see the real Prahlada on this actor. Now you can see the opposite also happens when we are not spiritually involved. Sometimes when we associate with spiritual personalities, we try to find fault with them because we want to project our own mind on them. So where we stand, accordingly we pursue and we create a world with our own mind. That's why many of our problems are imagined problems or imaginary problems, not real problems. Many of the problems that if any modern psychiatrist will tell you, many problems, large number of psychiatric problems are creations of human imagination. So it's a very interesting thing. So yoga brings out this fundamental principle. So you see, the light of buddhi is taken from Atman, because buddhi itself, intelligent intellect, mind itself doesn't have the ability to reflect. But this reflecting medium should be purified through spiritual practices, through association with spiritual personalities. If we cannot directly associate with spiritual persons, we can associate with them through ideas that come from them. So that's why it's a very interesting description by Vyasa. Then there is another great commentator. He was Vijnana Bhikshu. He says, Buddhi is not a magnet. Chittam is the magnet, which literally doesn't make much difference. But there's a third commentator, his name is Bhoja. He says, the Purusha itself acts as a magnet. You know, these are for scholarly discussions. I don't want to confuse you by presenting different views. But the simple principle, this common principle should be understood. The principle is this. In our true nature, we are pure. We are free from all types of imperfections, sufferings, everything. But then what happens? Our mind sometimes is not very pure. So it becomes an imperfect reflecting medium. And it acts as a magnet. So it attracts different various objects, different experiences. See, if we are fully established in an ideal, in a spiritual ideal, then what happens? It regulates the way mind attracts external objects. That's the commentators make a very interesting statement. We should have a central ideal. That's a very interesting contribution by commentators like Bhoja, Vijnana Bhikshu and others. The very interesting idea. How to make the mind attract or absorb only good things from external world so that we can always be in a state of perfect steadiness of mind. For that, the commentators say, we must have one great guiding ideal. And once we keep that high ideal in our mind, then our mind won't absorb, attract undesirable objects from external world. But we can't help it. We cannot really guide our mind not to get attracted, not to attract undesirable objects. But what happens is, if we have a high ideal in mind, if our mind is linked to a high spiritual ideal, then mind may attract external objects as a magnet, you know, as is ayaskanta manigalpam, is a commentator's language. Vyasa uses the word. It's a magnet. Like magnet, mind may attract external things. When you are traveling, when in your life, we cannot really keep the mind closed. The way we keep a physical mechanism closed, we cannot keep the mind closed. But what happens when the mind is linked to a great spiritual ideal, then this attraction of external things won't remain strong. That's why if you have a very high ideal in mind, then we're able to, oh, these things come and go. I need not worry about it. My ideal is something higher. Swami Vivekananda makes a very interesting statement. He says, a man with an ideal may make 5 mistakes. A man without an ideal may be 50,000 mistakes. That's the only difference. A man with an ideal also makes mistakes, only 5 mistakes. His mind also attracts 50,000 objects. But 45,000, etc., I mean, just except 5, the rest, its mind filters away. So mind develops a kind of filtering capacity. It becomes a filtering mechanism by which we are able to drop off, avoid too many problems. That's the purpose of, that's the benefit of keeping the mind linked to a higher ideal. So we'll continue the discussion the next class. Maybe we have a few more minutes. Okay. Now we can have discussion perhaps, you know. I can quote one verse from the Bhagavata Purana. It is related to family life, human life. The verse is, Gurur na sasyat സുജനോ ന സസ്യാത് പിതാ ന സസ്യാത് ജനനി ന സാസ്യാത് ദൈവം ന തത് സ്യാത് ന പതിശ്ച സസ്യാത് ന മോചയേയ സമുപേത മൃത്യു. ഇറ്റ്സ് എ വെരി ഇൻട്രസ്റ്റിംഗ് ഡിസ്ക്രിപ്ഷൻ. ഇറ്റ് സേസ് എ ടീച്ചർ ഈസ് നോട്ട് എ ടീച്ചർ, എ ഫാദർ ഈസ് നോട്ട് എ ഫാദർ, മദർ ഈസ് നോട്ട് എ മദർ. And again, a number, list continues. If they do not help you with this higher wisdom, with this faculty to link our mind to a higher ideal. So what we need is nothing but to link our mind to a higher ideal. Mind also will attract it. As a magnet, it functions as a magnet, as the commentators say. There's no way out. But after some time, the mind will drop away these things, undesirable things. If the mind is linked to a higher ideal, if the mind is not linked to a higher ideal, the mind will accumulate all the dirt and filth and undesirable things. It becomes a huge bag full of a lot of undesirable ideas and imageries and impressions, and also a few good things, of course. If the mind is linked to a higher ideal, then the percentage of undesirable, harmful impressions will be reduced automatically, and the percentage of higher positive, spiritual, or any kind of positive ideas, that means the percentage will be higher. That's all. Okay, now we'll have interaction discussions. We have just about 6 minutes now. Yeah.
But we just try to empirical world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Desire to attachment, pleasure, but the one, I always get confused, like, the suffering that Buddha saw was more related to, like, old age, suffering, sickness. Different kind of
book. Yeah, I will explain. Buddha was brought up in a palace where he was forced to think that everything is wonderful in his empirical physical life. So his father, Suddhodana, there was a prediction that Buddha may become a monk, which his father didn't like, family didn't like. So he was deliberately forced to live in a palace without seeing any of the realities of empirical life. So the sight of an old man or sick man or a dead body, all these, must have suddenly opened his eyes to the reality. But along with the opening of eyes, there is also opening of a higher wisdom. There is something beyond all this. His father and his ministers, the whole population of the city, they were all seeing this every day. They didn't get this higher wisdom. So this experience opened a new channel of thought. So, and then he saw the face of a saint, and the expression on the saint, on the face of the saint, was totally different from the expression that he saw on the people who were mourning the death of their relative, or the sick man who was sitting, or the old aged man suffering. So, in fact, these two go together. The sight of the imperfection, the sight of the transitoriness of empirical life, and the emergence of a higher wisdom go together. Without that higher wisdom, he would not have left the palace. People don't leave the palaces when they see a sick man in the streets. They won't give in, they won't do anything. So the emergence of a higher wisdom and the realization of the imperfection of empirical existence, they go together. But this could always happen for a Buddha and not for others. Buddha had lived through hundreds of earlier lives. There is an ascending order of evolution. Jataka tales, you find Buddha lived as princes, emperors, kings, and he had multiple roles in his previous lives. And at the end of his evolution, he was born as Buddha. So he was ready for opening his eyes to this higher spiritual wisdom, which could happen only to Buddha. Again, I tell you, that's why I took special care to repeat this idea again and again. In the Patanjali system, when you use the word dukkha, the word dukkha should not be interpreted as misery or suffering or the realization of the transitoriness, the non-eternal nature, the imperfect nature, or of all empirical pleasures, and leading to a higher spiritual insight. That's what is meant by dukkha in this particular context. So, the Sanskrit word used is dukkha. See, even Buddha, you know, Buddha says these are chatvari arya satyani, four fundamental noble truths. How can understanding of misery become a noble truth? So even in Buddhist philosophy, dukkha doesn't necessarily mean the physical misery of a sick man or the misery that the relatives, a dead person, undergo. No. It's totally different. So the Sanskrit word is chatvari arya satyani, four noble, great, noble truths. They are noble truths. The realization of the non-eternal nature of empirical things is called a noble truth. So the word dukkha could create this kind of, that's why many times I repeated the word dukkha doesn't necessarily mean Hindi, in Hindi or in Indian language dukkha means, you know, totally different. So that I wanted to remove that misunderstanding. That's why I explained again and again, it is the emergence of a new perspective. When you realize the impermanence of external things, phenomena, that's the idea behind it. This happens without seeing a dead man or anything. Sometimes happens when you read a great book, when you... these things happened without seeing external misery. If you read a great book, if you listen to any of this, suddenly a new perspective may emerge in your mind. So this is called we grow in wisdom. In a way, it's associated with wisdom also, higher wisdom. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.